It was Are You OK Day the other day, a reminder that mental health problems are common. Sometimes, often, the people who have them need care. That's usually provided by someone who loves them. And as Ara Creswell, CEO of Carers Australia, explains, this affects a lot of people.
We know that of the 2.7 million unpaid carers, 240,000 of them are providing support to somebody for a mental health condition.
So if you were to pay for that care in any other way, how much are we talking about?
If we as Australians were to replace the cost of all unpaid carers, it would be over $60 billion a year. If you were to replace the cost of mental health carers, it would be over $13 billion a year. But what we're talking about there is if we had to replace the care that family and friends give voluntarily by paid care, there would be a substantial cost to the Australian economy.
Indeed. Now, as I understand it, it's mostly women and also young people who are providing the care.
It's predominantly women in the middle ages. When you get to the younger people and the older people, there's a fairly even gender split. So with the young people, we find almost as many young men as young women providing care. And in the older ages, it's predominantly partners providing care. So there are many men providing care for older women. But in the areas in between, you'll find it's mostly women providing that care.
All right. Well, I'll come on to that specifically in a moment. But just on the young people, how does having caring responsibilities, and in some cases quite onerous responsibilities, impact on things like education for them?
It's really tough for young carers. They find they have to try and balance their education with their caring. They often find themselves distracted at school. They find they can't get their assignments in on time. They might not have the right equipment, say, to play sport because there isn't enough money. They also find they're tired. So for those carers who have to get up in the night, who might need to pick up mum if she's fallen or change a wet bed, or who have to get up early to help get other young siblings off to school before helping a parent, they'll find themselves really tired, and often the first thing that gives is education. We work really hard with young carers to try and keep them at school, to try and find ways to give them the support they need, to make sure they get the education they need. Otherwise, they end up without work and on long-term social welfare benefits. The other thing is they often find it very hard to tell others at school why they're tired or why they can't afford to go on camp. And it might not just be that they can't afford because there's no money, because they're putting all the money into electricity bills where they need to keep the room a constant temperature, into bills if a person is incontinent and they've got to wash and dry a lot. So they might be trying to keep the family afloat. But they might also not be able to leave for more than 24 hours at a time because there isn't any replacement care. Now, the young people find that really hard to talk about. This is my mum and she's incontinent, or this is my dad and he has a psychosocial disability. It's a pretty tough thing at school. So we've got to find ways to support young carers through their schooling to enable them to actually participate in something like a homework club, as well as to give them the financial support to perform that caring role. You know, have a crack at the exams and a chance to get a decent job afterwards.
Now, with the older carers, the middle-aged ones, most of whom are women, are most of them working or not?
We find that a lot of the carers are working, many of them part-time. What we do know is that if a significant number of carers aren't able to combine work and care, they'll have to abandon one of those roles. If it's work, there'll be a very substantial rise in the cost of social welfare. If it's care, there'll need to be a significant rise in the cost of paid carers. So we want to encourage workers to maintain some connection to work where we can. We want to be able to support them to go to work when they can, but also to be able to perform their caring role when they need to do that.
And are there, I suppose, employers or sectors that are better at supporting carers who are also working part-time?
I'd love to say that there are a whole lot of employers who are better at it, but I think we've got a long way to go. as workplaces, we've actually come a long way in understanding that parents might need to drop everything if their children are sick. They rush to the hospital if kids had an accident at school. They ring up and say, my child, you know, has a virus, I can't come in. And all workplaces don't go, yee-haw, that's fabulous. Many of them go, oh, that's tough, but we understand. I don't think we've got there yet when it comes to all other caring responsibilities. So when it comes to, you know, husband with dementia, dad who's had a fall, a partner with a chronic or terminal illness, certainly issues around psychosocial disability, I don't think workplaces are close to getting an understanding of that. We need to make sure we develop carer-friendly workplaces, because the reality is that in our lifetimes, each of us is likely to either be or need a carer.
So what are the steps a workplace can take? If someone listening now thinking, yeah, actually, we could do better at this, what's the sort of roadmap for them?
I would encourage you to go to the Carers Australia website, and the roadmap is there. It's in detail. It's all done for you. You simply have to have a look. But really what I'd do if I was an employer is I'd start by surveying, anonymously surveying my staff. How many of you have a role? What kind of flexibility do you need? And I'm not talking about such flexibility that the job doesn't get done, but it might simply be that on Wednesday morning someone comes in late because that's when dad goes to physiotherapy. And the other thing I'd do if I was a workplace is find out what are the local supports that I could refer someone to if it's getting really tough, if a person looks like they're struggling with that caring.
So this is partly about processes, but it's also about culture, isn't it?
It's absolutely about culture. And the reality is many workplaces already have a culture of flexibility. But we need to actually vocalise it. We need to let employees know that it's okay. It's okay to say that this is a carer-friendly workplace.
Are there countries that we can look to where they're further down this path than we are?
The UK is definitely, I'd say, the furthest down the path. They have an initiative called Employers for Carers, and they've done a lot of work. They've also recently developed their 2018 to 2020 Carers Action Plan, and it has a strong focus on carers and employment. And they've certainly done the stuff that helps employers realise that there's a strong business case to keeping people engaged with work. The primary age for caring is 45 to 64. It's the time when we're the best at our jobs, we're the most skilled, we come with a lot of experience, we're often managers. What we don't want to do is lose all of those people because we don't provide the kind of workplace that those people can perform their caring role and still come to work.
Ara Creswell is CEO of Carers Australia.